Thank you for joining in once again and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Aaron Howlett. Join us again as we go on another culinary adventure of the Comox Valley and beyond.
On this episode of the Edible Valley, we're talking wild foraging and medical mushrooms. Well, Darren, it's great to be in studio, and we're actually in my studio.
Yeah, back to the basics, back to the beginning.
Yeah, so I hate to say it, but we're in the basement. I wouldn't call it a basement because we're sitting next to a grand piano, and we got the fire going, so it's nice and warm here. Today, I think we're going to go into something that actually myself and Blaine touched on in one of our first episodes.
Really?
And that was mushrooms and foraging.
Do you know, this is a long time coming because if you guys talked about it in one of your first episodes, I know I mentioned it in one of the first that I came in, so probably around episode 40 or 50, that it was something I really was looking forward to, talking about mushrooms. And
right.
And here we are at episode 150, 151?
151, yes.
Yeah, here we are, and finally talking about mushrooms. Today we have Michael Vossen, amateur enthusiast mycologist, probably sums it up a little bit. Maybe you would have a better description. Welcome, Michael.
Basically, hobbyist, self-taught mushroom researcher.
I think that sums up.
You could just shorten that. I like to say mycologist because it's one word.
Right.
You know, but some people get mad about that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So we've known you for a few years. I've been circling, trying to get you on the show. You know, things just never seem to come together for us, unfortunately.
So what we're trying to say is we're really excited to have you here today.
Yeah, we're happy we got you here. We've known you for a while as being, foremost one of our local experts on mushrooms.
And most people can see you down at the farmer's market quite often, right?
That's right. Yeah. I've been there for about 2.5 years. Every single Saturday, except I might have missed two markets because my car wouldn't start.
Oh, no.
So I'm, serious farmer's marketpreneur.
Nice.
And then in the summer, they have two extra ones. They have a Wednesday downtown Courtney market
right. And
then a Sunday Cumberland.
And you're at those as well?
As well, yeah.
Fantastic.
So when do you find time to pick the mushrooms?
We do a lot of harvesting in the fall between about September and November, sometimes even December if there's not any snow. We'll basically pick from September all the way up until the first frost. Mm-hmm. And then there's like maybe two more varieties you can keep picking. But all the really popular ones like the chanterelles, the pines, the lobsters, the cauliflower, the chicken in the woods, those things all die off pretty much mid to late November. I've been picking for probably over 9 years, and I've seen a lot of changes in the seasons. Like there was one year where we had a very mild winter, and I was picking chanterelles, and even the winter chanterelle variety,
right?
Like they call them yellowfoots, right. All the way up until mid-January. And I even went for a hike up North Island,
right,
around Sayward. We were, you know, some friends were checking out some really famous record-sized trees there, and I saw a patch of winter chanterelles on the first day of spring 4 years ago. So winter chanterelles on the first day of spring.
That's incredible.
You know, just one little patch. So I guess the mycelium survived and there was enough, you know, rain and water and enough heat.
So what exactly do you harvest? What exactly are you out there looking for? I mean, it seems like you have quite a range on your table.
Yeah, so I try to keep a lot of varieties dried. And so in the fall, depending on how wet of a summer we have, if we have a lot of rain in August, then I'm able to pick wild mushrooms in the first week of September. If I have a very dry August or a very dry summer, I might not be picking till the first week of October, if that. Yeah, so that's a huge change in a season. You know, one year I'm like, you know, out there on the first week of September looking, scavenging, and then it's like, oh, nothing yet. So usually what I'll do is if I don't find anything the first week of September, I'll wait about 2 weeks. But if I do find something on the first week of September, I'll be back out there the next week. And so I will pick really hard. Well, nowadays I go out there maybe twice a week and pick really hard.
Mm-hmm. What's picking hard? Like what kind of a day is that?
You know, I'm up at 4.
Oh, God.
I'm on the road at 5. I'm hitting the patch before I can even see the mushrooms.
Wow.
And I'm like, sometimes I even use like a headlamp. And then I'm out there all day till I can't see the ground.
That is hard.
Two days a week in the peak season.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll have some friends with me on those days. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll be picking on other days.
That sounds like a lot of work.
But you mentioned too that you gave off some varieties there in the beginning. And again, being that you're always a presence at the market, obviously when you're picking all of those, you're selling fresh when you can, but you've definitely upped your game with dried, powdered, what have you, I've noticed over the last few years. So that's, you're picking that much quantity to get you through the year now.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and we also grow a few varieties locally.
Right. Okay.
So we try to have fresh mushrooms in the spring, mm-hmm. or at least mid-spring, all the way up until the wild harvest season. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's quite staggered because right. we will tend to often eat the ones we grow. And that's pretty much just the oyster mushroom, the shiitake, lion's mane. We also grow red reishi, which is not for eating, but for making tea. So mm-hmm. it's a really hard woody mushroom that you have to break down and boil down into a tea in water.
Right.
Or you can soak it in alcohol and make an herbal extract.
Interesting.
Like a tincture and take it like a concentrated amount, small concentrated, almost like a supplement. So that's what we grow, just those four varieties. So we'll have those fresh and dried almost, you know, seasonally. And then everything else is wild, fresh between September and November or dried 12 months of the year. So we do a lot of drying in the sun if we can.
Yeah.
Can't dry them in the sun. We'll dry them in a dehydrator. Sometimes in the late summer, they'll dry on their own, mm-hmm. just left out in a room with mm-hmm. good ventilation. Mm-hmm. If it's fall or late fall, we tend to have to dry them in dehydrators. But if it's early fall, we can use the sun often.
Do you find it hard to sell people dried mushrooms? Do you find that like takes some convincing?
Well, they are harder to sell. People that know how to use them, like chefs, like you guys, no problem. But when I have fresh, mm-hmm. they go like hotcake. Like if I have fresh, I could probably have like anywhere from $50 fresh at the market or $500 fresh, and they all go.
Regardless what you got.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's because people just want to get their hands on them. Like,
yeah, and they look nice.
I know even in the restaurant, you just throw chanterelle mushrooms on anything and it'll sell.
Right.
I mean, literally from salmon to steaks to any kind of vegetarian dish, it's like people are just like, okay, I want them.
Yeah.
Especially when they're in season because they've got such a beautiful flavor to them and they look gorgeous on the plate. Like, mm-hmm. they make you look like a superhero. Just put a couple fresh sauteed chanterelle mushrooms. You know, maybe one or two slices on them and just place them on a plate and they just make that plate pop and come together. So.
Well, what about, and that's the thing, like I'm a fan of dried mushrooms, but, you know, it, as Michael said, you know, generally like a chef would know their value and their merit of having dried mushrooms. Like, you know, what for out there for people that aren't buying dried mushrooms, what would you say?
Well, I would say like dry mushrooms really bring that flavor out.
I think they have a great, they have a great intense flavor.
Yeah, like I make like making a mushroom gravy using mm-hmm. dried mushrooms because, you know, I'll just take them and soak them in some red wine for a little while.
Yeah.
And then just let them reduce in there and then add my stock in there and reduce down that to make a nice, beautiful demi-glaze. Like it's just got amazing flavor. Same for any, like definitely any slow cooking process you're doing, like throwing some dried mushrooms in, like just... you're going to get that mushroom flavor.
Totally. A lot of recipes will call for dried mushrooms. Mm-hmm. I think one of the main problems with trying to sell the dried ones is they don't look like the fresh ones. So sometimes it's a trust issue.
Right.
And maybe it's also like they're in a plastic bag.
Right.
People might not like that. But when they're in like a little produce pint or like a little plate or whatever, mm-hmm. And people can recognize them and they're full of water, people tend to trust those ones more.
Right.
The average person. But, chef, you know, a chef can just look at them, the dried ones, smell them, and they know.
Yeah.
Or they're going to someone they trust.
Well, and that's a great thing to do is just get that smell. Like, mm-hmm. you can tell once you smell mushrooms that whatever that's in there, especially like your dried ones. And you can really tell that distinct flavor. Like, and that's going to, essence is going to come out in sauce or whatever that you're combining it into.
Totally.
Yeah.
The dried ones you can powder.
Yeah.
And make, you know, make a gravy or a sauce where you can't really, you can make a good sauce with fresh ones, but it's not like that kind of like the gravy or the rubs you can make.
Oh, yeah.
Or the seasonings, powders. So
absolutely.
A lot of use for both, you know.
Yeah. What was the one I did? Lamb. Mm? A rack of lamb. I think it was porcini.
Oh, yeah, porcini. Yeah.
And I just ground them to a powder and just basted it in there and just, or sorry, just like rubbed them in there really gently and then seared it in the pan and just that flavor of mushroom.
Oh, yeah.
Exploded.
I can imagine.
In like that umami, is that what's called? Umami flavor?
Yeah, umami.
Yeah. Which is pretty savory. Much mushrooms are, as they've got this beautiful savory.
But while we're talking about powder, and again, I know that you're not necessarily licensed to do this, or you're not licensed to be an expert, but you do have a great body of knowledge. They have great medicinal purposes too.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you've definitely make people aware of those medicinal properties.
Absolutely, yeah. So we pick and grow a combination of the edibles, like wild edible medicinals, and then we'll cultivate the wild edible medicinals. Now, usually when people think of a medicinal mushroom, they're thinking of a hard woody mushroom that you have to boil into a tea. But there are some examples, like shiitake would be a great example of a mushroom that's both edible and medicinal. So you can cook it, fry it up, and eat it, and it has a lot of medicinal value.
Right.
Reishi mushroom, you can only boil it into a tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's just too woody to actually eat. Another great example of a mushroom that's both edible and medicinal would be like maitake.
Okay.
Called hen of the woods. It's a, they would consider it a soft polypore.
Mm.
So reishi is a polypore, but it's a really hard polypore.
Mm-hmm.
Maitake or hen of the woods, it's a soft polypore. So you could chop it up, fry it, eat it. And another great example would be like lion's mane.
And what, can you give us some of the properties that these are, would help?
Yeah, like, well, most of them, pretty much all the medicinal mushrooms have three things in common. They're all really great for either boosting or regulating the immune system.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so they won't just stimulate the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually calm it down, suppress it. If people have a overactive immune system, like an autoimmune problem.
Right.
So that's a really valuable thing about them.
Interesting.
And immune regulating, or sometimes they call it immunomodulating or immune regulating, or that's pretty, they're in herbal medicine, they're considered the adaptogenic herbs.
Okay.
So in Chinese medicine, they use a lot of mushrooms, roots, and berries. And the herbs or herb foods that work more than one way, like reishi, you know, can stimulate the immune system or suppress it, these would be considered the adapting or adaptogenic herbs. So there are lots of herbs that are good for the immune system,
right?
But they'll only just stimulate.
Right.
Right? You take it one time, stimulate. Take it again, stimulate.
Exactly.
And you're like, oh, I'm way overstimulated. You take it again, it's like it's a problem now.
Right.
Like a great example would be like garlic does that. It's a great immune stimulator. Echinacea, just but only up, only stimulating. So with the medicinal mushrooms, they all have the immune regulating properties.
Mm.
They also tend to, as far as I know, they all have antiviral properties.
Right.
Like all the ones I can think of off the top of my head, they're all antiviral.
Interesting.
And they're all anti-inflammatory.
Really?
That would be like, as far as I know, the ones that I use and study and have read up on, they're all anti-inflammatory.
Yeah. And I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. Like nobody's counting on you as being, you know, the expert here that's now dishing out medical advice, but just as a hobbyist, as an enthusiast, as somebody that's had great contact with these for 10 years, these are things you've found after having been told that they do have these properties.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially the ones that I use.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So like the reishi, shiitake, the lion's mane, the chaga, the maitake, cordyceps. I don't pick that, but I sometimes use that. All anti-inflammatory.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Mushrooms are amazing, eh?
Yeah.
Like it's such a huge field and it's so regional too, because you have the mushrooms that grow in this area, but then they're completely on the other side of North America to Europe to Asia. but they're everywhere, mm-hmm. and they have so many benefits depending on what region they're from.
Yeah, and so flavors. I mean, a lot of people will lump them all into one flavor, but I find, like, there is a huge flavor range in mushrooms. Like, just between, like, let's say a button mushroom and a shiitake and a chanterelle, like, obviously. And I know that I may be preaching to the converted, but a lot of people out there that I know that are still on the fence when thinking about mushrooms, which is the people that I hope that we're reaching, you'll find a huge flavor range in mushrooms. There's a lot. You can go for woody, like a woody taste, more of an earthy taste. You can go for almost, there's some will have almost a sweetness to them. Anything?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. Like, so all the medicinal mushrooms that I use and pick, they all have those three things in common. They're all immune regulating, they're all antiviral, and they're all anti-inflammatory. But then some of those have extra little features that the other ones won't.
Right.
Like, for example, chaga mushroom tends to be the highest in antioxidant. Lion's mane has a nerve healing property that the other ones don't.
Learning more and more about the mushrooms. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the show.
Yeah.
So what can you tell, you know, maybe other enthusiasts like me who've gone out 10 times, 15 times and had semi-success?
Well, how about someone who's never been out? Not that I'm saying I've never done
but I'm
saying for some of our listeners who are out there, we're like, okay, like and mushrooms sounds good. I like eating them. Maybe I want to go explore in the woods.
And I don't want you to give up your spots.
No, no.
Like,
I have
like,
really,
what should people be looking for?
I have a really good thing to say about that.
Yeah.
You definitely never want to, like, this is the first rule of the book, kind of, when you're thinking about picking wild mushrooms. You don't want to pick anything you're not 100% sure what it is.
Right.
From my experience and what I've gathered and what I've been told and taught is that there are no mushrooms that are poisonous to touch. I could be wrong, but that's...
I've heard the same thing.
Okay.
That
absolutely.
You can't poison yourself by touching them.
By touching, yeah, exactly. But you never want to, like, touch a poisonous mushroom and then rub your eyes. There's a little trick where you can take a tiny little nibble of a mushroom, like the tiniest little taste. You don't eat it or swallow it. You wait for your tongue to go numb. I don't do this. this is like in the books. This is like, you know, if you want to know, you know, survival books, we'll talk about this.
I've read this one, and I think it's the D&D survival book. Take a little pinch, bite one, wait 8 hours. If you get sick, don't eat anymore.
Who wants to be in that position, right?
No.
Like,
no.
You know, that's if you're like way out in the forest in your survival situation. And the same, you know, you definitely don't want to get yourself in that situation. But
no.
It is good to have that knowledge, though.
True.
I when I go camping, I'll bring some dried mushrooms. I'll mm-hmm. bring some fresh ones if I have them. And then I'll pick whatever's around. There are definitely some that are way easier to identify. Like oyster mushrooms are really easy to identify.
Super easy.
Yeah. They grow on wood.
Yeah.
They tend to grow on alder, maple, or cottonwood. Mm-hmm. Alder, mostly on alder that I see. And very easy to identify. Going back to that whole, you know, what's a good rule of thumb? I can give you some examples of some things that have happened that I've heard of recently that are kind of a bit negative, where someone will come up to me in the farmer's market and I'll show them, you know, some examples of reishi on my table, dried versions. And then what they do is they go and they find it, or they find what they think is reishi, and they chop it up and they either dry it or they boil it into a tea, and then they might get sick. And then when they tell me that, they're like, oh yeah, I went out and picked some reishi just the other day and made a tea with it. Well, they picked it in like February. Mm-hmm. When this thing is done, I don't know if this one particular person got sick from the mushroom or something else, but she told me that this sickness happened around the same time.
Right.
But she definitely was picking it in February. It's definitely rotten. This thing can like die and rot, but still be on the tree.
Right.
Like it doesn't have to fall off the tree to be done. It can actually drop its spores, start to rot, but mm-hmm. still be attached to the tree and still show some signs of reishi, like
right.
through identification.
Yeah, so I mean, there's steps you want to take to not be there.
So yeah, I always offer people to come up to me at the farmer's market between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Saturday, downtown Courtney at the Native Sims Hall, or even outside when it goes outside in April, mm-hmm. Across from Vanier. They can bring me their dried or fresh samples, mm-hmm. and I can ID them for them. And I also give people the option to email me pictures of an above view of the mushroom and then the bottom view of either the gills or the pores on the bottom. And they can send me a picture. It's VancouverIslandMushrooms@gmail.com.
Okay.
And if they send me two pictures, I can try to at least narrow it down to the family.
Right.
But I can never, I actually never tell people to use it from a picture.
Right.
But I can help them sort of narrow it down to at least the family. Or what I can do is I can say that's probably most likely a chanterelle.
Right.
Or it's probably most likely a reishi, but I don't recommend eating or using it from a picture. But they can bring me dried or fresh examples to the market. And you would be surprised how little that happens.
Really?
I tell everyone, hey, bring me a sample. Bring me a dried sample. Bring me a fresh sample.
Yeah.
No problem. No one ever does that.
Interesting.
You know, one person did this year. Yeah. They brought me some turkey tails that were fresh. They were turkey tails, but there is a false turkey tail out there.
Right.
That is not, I don't know if it's harmful, mm-hmm. but it hasn't been studied.
I'm an amateur too. There's a type of pine out there that I had originally encountered and thankfully didn't eat until somebody's like, nope, you picked the wrong thing for sure. But, and I think maybe I'm somewhat excessive my first time, and still to this day, I do it in some regard. I go out mushroom picking. If I come upon some of the mushrooms I'm looking for, I put them in an individual brown paper bag from that group. Anything from that sort of group, that area, that region where I picked that particular mushroom, go in that bag. And then if I come upon other mushrooms that I believe are also edible that I recognize from other books that I have, I'll put them in a separate bag altogether. And then if I come upon even some of those first mushrooms again in a new patch, they still get a new bag.
Yeah.
And I keep everything separate so that if there is one poisonous mushroom in there, I haven't spoiled all my take for the day.
Yeah.
I keep everything individual.
It's a very good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I would hope that most people had that common sense
anyways,
but you wouldn't believe what some people do. They learn one quick mushroom quickly.
Right.
And they think they're like, I know that mushroom. Yeah. Chanterelle, I got it. I got it. They don't consider the substrate or the trees associated. They don't consider the season. Some people bring me mushrooms in the spring. They're like, is this a chanterelle? Well, those grow, between September and November.
Yeah, and there are a few out there that look quite like a chanterelle that are definitely not a chanterelle. So, yeah, not trying to put the fear of God in anyone or whatever. I'm not trying to make people uninterested in it. I think everybody should be out trying to, collecting up mushrooms. I think that's fantastic.
I always like to go with a thing. If someone showed me that knows what it is, then that's the mushroom that you can go with. And I think that's how I learned about chanterelles, is going out with people over and over again and then and being like, okay, is this one? And they'd be like, yeah, okay. Well, is this one? Yeah. No, that's not. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And just learning the subtleness between the different mushrooms. And yeah, like you said, where they're growing and how they're growing, what's growing with them.
Yeah.
What's the season? All those wonderful things. It's like, that makes a big difference in what you're getting. So.
Absolutely. Yeah, those first few times, although I had multiple books at home to judge against and compare against, I still took them both to my brother and you and just said, is this exactly what I've got here? And, and between the both of you agreeing, plus all my books confirming, then I was like, okay, well, and that started my path down being confident in knowing that I'm taking, not necessarily that I now know what I'm doing, but I know that I'm taking the right steps, that I should continue to do that. I should definitely make sure everything is verified until I have a certain body of knowledge myself, which I would recommend others do.
Yeah, like even though earlier we were talking about oyster mushrooms, how they're one of the easiest to identify, when I, like 9 or 10 years ago, or maybe even 11 years ago, when I first started to pick mushrooms as a hobby, I was picking other wild foods and other wild herbs as well. I came across what I thought was an oyster mushroom. I looked at probably 200 Google images, and I still wasn't confident to eat it because every Google image looks slightly different. And the oyster mushrooms throughout North America can be anywhere from like a white to a beige to a gray.
Right.
And they grow on, like around here, it's alder, maple, and cottonwood, but you'll get them on other species in other parts of North America. Mm-hmm. So like that's how cautious I was.
Right.
Like 200 Google images, and I still didn't eat it.
Yeah.
And the only time I ever ate it after that was when I had I had at that point, I didn't know about the tree species. Right. I was just seeing white oyster-looking mushrooms on.
Right.
I didn't know what an alder tree was. Like, right. Like I kind of knew what one was alive, but dead. I was like, is that a birch?
Right.
You know what I mean? And they don't.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a good point that if you want to get into this as a hobbyist, that's something you're going to have to learn is identifying trees because the types of trees are definitely associated with the types of mushrooms.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Like the chanterelle, like this part of the world, chanterelles are associated with fir, mm-hmm. and the pines are associated with fir and pine trees. And lobster mushrooms are associated with fir. Mm-hmm. Morels tend to be associated with the deciduous trees like alder, maple, cottonwood. A lot of them, most of the really choice edible gourmet wild mushrooms are associated in some way with fir, mm-hmm. If they're grown off the ground. And then the tree mushrooms, they tend to be associated with alder, maple, cottonwood, and then maybe sometimes hemlock. Mm-hmm. But the medicinal tree mushrooms that grow on trees, mm-hmm. You'll never find them around cedar or pine.
Right.
Like the pine mushroom grows out of the ground.
Right.
And is associated with the pine trees. But I don't see too many mushrooms growing off pine trees, except for occasionally I'll see chicken of the woods on pine.
Right.
But, you know, yeah. There's not a lot that grow with cedar.
Right.
There's actually nothing that grows with
cedar. Is that because of the cedar's high acidity, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just too much resin.
Right.
And even pine is almost too much resin.
Right.
But the one thing I can think of is like maybe chicken of the woods on
chicken,
pine.
Chicken yeah. of the woods, which is right. hard to work with, I find. It's, yeah. Unless you get it really, really young.
Really young, yeah.
It's usually quite woody. So.
Yeah. I always recommend people, you know, when they find chicken of the woods, if it's young, you can eat most of it, but you tend to always leave like a stem, not just for... regrowth. Like a lot of people say, you know, leave a lot on the tree when you cut it so that it can stay established and grow well. Well, I don't really think that makes much of a difference because the mycelium, like the mushroom roots, have to already be quite established in that tree to
right.
produce the mushroom. But if the chicken of the woods is more mature, you really only want to cut 2 or 3 inches off the edge.
Okay.
And for edibility.
Yeah.
So you're also leaving a big chunk on the tree for these people that say, oh, it's a good idea to leave a chunk on the tree.
Right.
So you're kind of doing two purposes. And you can come back 2 or 3 weeks later, cut 2 more inches
harvest
off.
Harvest more often.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, that was my next question. So I wanted to go into like, okay, so now you've gone out, you found someone. I'm going to say you found someone to identify them for you and teach you what to pick. What's the proper way of picking a mushroom? Is there a proper technique? Because I've heard some people just... reach down low and pull it straight out. Some
like
people
pluck it
like,
or
some
cut.
People say cut it right at the ground.
I know. It's so controversial. It's like the whole time I've been picking mushrooms, I still have not found a person or an article that is like, yep, this is the way you do it.
Right.
You cut it. But a lot of, like I've heard anything from like, well, one of the recent articles I've read is that there is actually still no proof that cutting a chanterelle is better than pulling it out. A lot of people say if you rip it out of the ground, you damage the mycelium patch.
Right.
But that patch...
Which, for people that might not be aware, that's more like the root structure.
Yeah, the root structure. Right. Yeah, the mycelium is the root structure, which already has to be fairly established. And it's not just right near that mushroom you picked. Like, it's... Mm-hmm. It's probably like 80 or 90 times bigger than the patch you're finding or the few mushrooms you find. So it'd be like people kind of compare it to like picking apples off a tree. You know, when you go to pick an apple, you're not cutting the branch. You might cut
right.
the stem part, but you're not using a knife. You know, and so when people say, you know, you got to cut the mushroom, so you don't damage the mycelium.
Mm-hmm.
If you went up to a tree to pick an apple and for some reason you wanted to cut 4 or 5 inches of the branch it's on, you're not killing the tree.
No. If anything, you're actually going to stunt the growth of that branch.
Yeah. So, you know, I cut chanterelles just so they have a clean cut.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in a rush, sometimes I'll pull them out.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I know is that chanterelles can often grow in pairs
mm-hmm.
where you'll have like... two mushroom fruit bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Fruit body just means the part you eat. the part you see, the reproductive part of the organism. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you'll get these twins or these pairs, mm-hmm. and sometimes one is very noticeable, and the other one can be a very small little nub that you don't really notice, like 4 or 5 inches down from the cap of the other one. So cutting the big one allows the small one to grow, but that can be that gets confused too. Sometimes the chanterelle grows in a single, mm-hmm. and people cut it because they think that the another one will grow in its place,
right.
without the double, without the twin,
right.
or the pair, even if there's no pair there. So that's what people get confused with.
Right.
But if you find a chanterelle and there's a one dominant big chanterelle with a little nub on the side, if you do cut above that little nub can turn into another chanterelle.
Right.
But if it's a single and you cut it, it's one a year, as far as I know.
What about, I mean, we've talked about trees. We've talked about, this climate. Maybe we haven't talked about that our climate's great for mushrooms. Being here in the West Coast, Canada, with, wet but not too wet, temperate without being super freezing or extremely hot. But, we've got some good mushroom-growing region here. What can people be looking for? What should they be looking for when they're, trying to set out and start this hobby?
The first thing I would recommend people is that if they're picking mushrooms in the fall, mm-hmm. pay attention to how much rain there is in July and August. If there's not much rain in July or in August, I wouldn't even start looking till mid-September, maybe even early October. But if we have a nice wet August, mm-hmm. You can find chanterelles late August.
Wow.
Yeah, or early September. So wait for, pay attention to how wet of a summer is, mm-hmm. and then in September or October, pay attention to the first heavy rain.
Okay.
And then even if it's been a dry summer, and we have a heavy rain in September, you still won't see anything for 2 to 4 weeks.
And then when you're picking a spot, are you picking a spot like heavy canopy of trees? Light canopy, do you need a lot of sun in there, or do you need it to be like dank and musty?
If you're looking for chanterelles, mm-hmm. you want the forest you're in to be mostly fir. And I find you find more chanterelles in a second or third growth fir forest than an old growth forest. In an old growth forest, you will find chanterelles, mm-hmm. but they're kind of patchy. In a second growth fir forest, it's almost like better commercial picking.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's almost like the fir trees at that stage of their life can support more chanterelles, especially if they're if it's mostly fir and they're all around the same size, and they have a good space in between them. Every tree might have 20 to 40 feet from each other in a second or third growth forest. That tends to be really good for picking commercial.
Interesting. Yeah. We probably should wrap this up. I mean, we could talk all day, but we've got to wrap this up at some point. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, John?
Oh, well, I've got lots of other questions, but
yeah.
Maybe we can save those for another time.
Or sure.
I thought maybe we could give some information because I know you do mushroom classes. So
yeah, I wanted to get to that too, that, this is just scratching the surface and you do offer great classes. Maybe you want to talk to that end.
Yeah, sometimes it's just me or I have a friend helping me. And so we offer anything from a 2-hour mushroom identification course, mm-hmm. usually on a weekend, like on a Saturday or a Sunday. Mm-hmm. Or we do a full day mushroom cultivation and identification course, which includes some information on how to use the medicinal mushrooms, a bit of culinary skills, mm-hmm. A bit of survival skills, how to process and dry. And then we also offer a 2-day mushroom workshop retreat down in Victoria or Souk, sometimes in Vancouver, or even we're going to plan one for the Comox Valley. That's a two-day mushroom workshop retreat that's broken into 2 days, where the first day is all identification.
Perfect.
So one full day on identification. So in the morning, we go out and we pick and we study the wild edibles and the wild medicinals. And in the afternoon, we go over how to use them.
Perfect.
Cook with them.
Yeah.
And then on day 2, the whole day is just cultivation. Right. So in the first so half
when,
of the yeah.
So when you're leaving, you're taking mushrooms with you.
Taking a kit home, you can take. Yep. There's we had the option between oyster mushroom, shiitake, lion's mane, or red reishi as a kit to take home. We even offer the materials like the supplies, so you can go home and make an extra kit.
Wow.
You'll take a fully made kit, inoculated log or bag. The log will just be like an alder log or a maple log. The bag version you can grow inside, and that's done on sawdust or wood chips.
Interesting.
Of the same species. And so on the second day of the retreat, the first half of the day is how to grow mushrooms outside on logs, stumps, or sawdust or wood chips. Mm-hmm. The second half of the day is how to grow inside, like indoors, and that would be inside plastic bags, or we use sometimes we'll use buckets.
Yeah.
That's with a combination of sawdust or wood chips with sometimes a little bit of a supplement. Like we'll use wheat bran,
right,
or we'll use lime, like a calcium magnesium supplement.
Right. Interesting. So you're not just leaving knowing how to identify mushrooms. You're also, and not just how to cultivate mushrooms, you are already in the process now after the course.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you go home with a kit that all you do is water.
That's wonderful.
You put it in the shade. You just make sure it doesn't dry out. The ones inside are a bit easier to manage. The plastic bag helps keep the moisture in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you'll learn how to grow inside and outside.
Fantastic. And so how do people find this course? Where do they sign up for this course?
You can find me at the Comox Valley Farmers Market between 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Saturdays. Inside, it'll be at the Native Sons Hall for a couple more weeks. In mid-April, it'll go outside to the fairgrounds. That's across from Vanier. And then besides that, you can get a hold of me from my email, which is vancouverislandmushrooms@gmail.com.
Okay. And then from there, people can find out more information about enlisting in these courses.
Absolutely. From there, I can send them a link to our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's Island Mushrooms on Facebook.
I'm part of that group.
On Twitter and on Instagram, it's also Island Mushrooms. Or you can... Sometimes you can find me on social media just from my name, Michael Vossen.
Right.
Vossen.
Right. Which I have. I've actually tracked you down once or twice over the years when I couldn't remember other things. Looked you up that way. Both great. Thank you, Michael, for coming in and talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been very illuminating.
Yes, thank you so much.
Anybody wants to know more and they want to know more about the podcast or this particular podcast or a way to talk to Michael or more about mushrooms, by all means, please get in touch with us or Michael. We're happy to answer any questions and give you some direction to learn more about any of the topics that we talk about on the podcast.
And also one more thing, anybody can send me a photo of a wild mushroom if they're hiking or if they're out camping. They can send me a picture of a wild mushroom. It's best to take two photos, one of the top cap of the mushroom, and then a below view of either the gills or the pores, and you can send that to vancouverislandmushrooms@gmail.com, and I can help you at least narrow it down to the family of what that mushroom could be.
Perfect.
Or visit you at the market with one.
Yeah, or okay. You can bring me samples. Yeah. Bring me fresh or dried samples to the farmer's market.
Perfect. Well, thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.
If we haven't covered something here that, you know, please get in touch with us. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us in a lot of places.
We always love to hear feedback from our listeners, and especially from you, just for you to give us a little 2 cents of how you feel about the podcast, what you'd like to see.
Maybe something we missed that we didn't cover that you want more details on.
Yeah, because I'd like just to say if there's anyone out there that is doing this currently or is about to get into this or know someone who's doing one of these few things, we would love to talk to you. So I'm looking for anyone who's in a restaurant, who's opening up a new restaurant and getting going.
Yeah.
New caterers out there. I know people always get into catering.
Yeah.
It always moves on to something else, but it's really nice to meet up with these people and find out what they're offering and what they can give to people. New producers, which is always great because there's been so many wonderful people that we've run into in this time that have grown their businesses, and it's really neat to see them start off from just really small things and how they progress. And we'd like to know their story of how they got into it. And don't forget farmers.
Yeah,
nothing better than knowing the people that are working with the lands, or even in our case, in the water. Yeah. Those farmers yeah. out there, we'd love to talk to you. And of course, we're always into new events. With there's so much happening in this community with that. Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that we never get a chance to talk about. And then, of course, if you're a food group or a foodie just in general, we'd love to talk to you and find out what some of your favorite foods are.
Yeah, even if you do, like, you know, those sort of foodie dinner groups, we would love to talk to you, like, want to know about your dinner groups and get some ideas, get some talking going about what's going on out there in, you know, in the smaller venues, not just the big venues.
And of course, we're putting up some recipes, some audio recipes for people to follow along. So if you're interested in any of that, we've got that all here at the Edible Valley Podcast.
Thanks to everybody that's helped us get here so far, all of our sponsors. As you know, with us stepping out and taking this in that new, more liberating direction, we are looking for new sponsors. We're a new sort of show with a new direction. So it's time to start anew. And we would love to get out there and talk to you or discuss anything further if you want to be a part of the show.
If you could just send us an email at theedibleValley@gmail.com. You can get us at Twitter at Edible Valley, Facebook at the Edible Valley Podcast. And once again, remember, keep it fresh, keep it flavorful, and keep it fun. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.